Back to the phone line, Cynthia, WMCA, Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Good talking to you.
My question surrounds the Ten Commandments. This was posed to me about a week ago. In Exodus chapter 20, we have the Ten Commandments, which I believe to be given by God. Then you have Moses comes down because there's a rumbling, and I think that happens in chapter 32. Moses breaks the tablets. And I come to verse 28 of chapter 34, and it says, Moses was up on the mountain with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. In all that time, he neither ate nor drank. At that time, he wrote the terms of the covenant, the Ten Commandments, on stone tablets. The question that was posed to me was that there are two sets, and in traditional Christianity, chapter 20 is the Ten Commandments, but that's incorrect. And it's actually what precedes verse 28 in chapter 34, ending with, you must not cook a young goat in its mother's milk.
Well, no, that's simply misguided. And the way that you can know that that is misguided is that if you go to the very chapter that you just delineated, chapter 34, it starts out saying, the Lord said to Moses, chisel out two stone tablets like the first ones, going back to the original Ten Commandments, and I will write on them the words that were on the first tablets, which you broke. So we know that there's no differentiation between the first set and the second set in terms of the commandments. Those commandments are, you shall have no other God before you, you shall not make for yourself an idol, you shall not misuse the name of the Lord, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, honor your father and mother, you shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not give false testimony against your neighbor, and you shall not covet. Those are the Ten Commandments on the first set of tablets, and those are the Ten Commandments on the second set of tablets. Now, what's important about your question, though, is that if you read through chapter 34, you find out that there are also all kinds of civil and ceremonial laws that are given. You mentioned one of them, but there are many others, and those civil and ceremonial laws were designed as pictures, as types that pointed forward to an antitype, and that antitype is ultimately Jesus Christ. So there are all ways through which you could look forward to Messiah, to ultimate redemption, before that redemption arrived on the scene. And that's why we can say that people in the time of Moses were saved in the same way that we are after the time of Christ. We look back at the cross. They looked forward to the cross, but through civil and ceremonial laws, which pointed forward to a reality, and that reality is Jesus Christ.
Gotcha. Could I follow it up with something that's within this same text?
Yeah.
When Moses, before he comes down, God, I guess, indicates to him that the people were below worshiping a calf. And God says to Moses, you know what, let me get away from me. I'm going to do away with these people because they make me sick. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And he says, I'm going to bless you and make a nation out of you. Then Moses speaks to God. The same person poses the thing to me that, you know, he doesn't understand the scripture because it's as if Moses is playing God. God knows everything. God knows what his promises are. Why would he need to be reminded? And I was reminded of the scripture that says, you know, I'm paraphrasing again, that, you know, to put God in remembrance of his words, of his promises. I was trying to explain it, but I failed.
Well, I don't think you failed. I think you did a good job. And I think the other thing you have to realize is that there's a communication device that's being used by Moses. It's a way of communicating what God's purposes and principles are. So when you read through a historical narrative, you have to understand that historical narratives are also interlaced with poetic Hebrew structures. And when you do, you recognize all kinds of literary devices which are intended to give you God's perspective in contrast to man's perspective. And those are employed in the text. There are also all kinds of anthropomorphisms, which is God condescending to speak in the manner that a human being can relate to. So when God says to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, "Where are you?" It's not as though God momentarily had a lapse and was not all-knowing. This is a literary device. It is God condescending to communicating through Moses in means that we can attain to or grasp.
Gotcha. So God didn't... I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying, but I want to be able to translate it.
Sure.
God did not, you know, have a temporary lapse and, you know, forget everything that he promised Abraham. He was... I guess the problem a person was having was God's anger. I can't speak with
yes.
for them.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, though. And we take this and we project ourselves into the words. When we get angry, most of the time it's not righteous indignation. It's a petty tantrum. It's a sin. This is not God as though God were man and he would throw a tantrum, but God is genuinely angry because God is holy and his holiness is being in some way encroached upon. Which in essence, when you think about it, ultimately gets down to the root of the gospel. In the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, you see at once the most brutal and yet the most beautiful act in all of human history. Because there you have the wrath of God against sin, against unrighteousness and wickedness poured out upon the spotless Lamb, the unblemished Lamb. And so you see God's wrath is against sin. It is against unrighteousness, against unholiness. And the problem we have when we come to texts like this is we have elevated man and diminished God so that the distance between man and God in modern-day parlance is very small. Well, in Moses' view, that distance is enormous. God is holy. So later on, when you see the holiest man in Israel, Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 6, he gets one glimpse of the holiness and glory of God, and he comes apart at the seams, doesn't he? And yet he's the holiest man in Israel. Well, what's being communicated here? What's being communicated is no matter how holy a man is, God's holiness, his justice, and his righteousness is infinitely greater. Make sense?
Yeah, it makes lots of sense. I'm going to call them right now.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
God bless you. I appreciate your call so much.